Welcome back to the Deep Dive. We're here to, well, really dig into the core intelligence from some cutting-edge research, and we tailored this specifically for you, our expert audience. Today, we're tackling, I think, one of the most persistent challenges in applied AI. How do you create scalable, high-quality, domain-specific training data? Especially when manual annotation just isn't practical.
Exactly. And our focus is assistive technology for the visually impaired. We're looking specifically at navigating dynamic urban environments. You know this better than anyone. Traditional aids like canes or guide dogs, they have limitations, right? Especially with rapid changes, unexpected obstacles, complex scenes.
Yeah, the stuff that happens constantly on a city sidewalk.
Precisely. So the goal here, technologically, is to use computer vision to give someone a real-time, comprehensive understanding of that sidewalk environment.
And this is such a fascinating problem from a data perspective. Because you're building something like this WayBuddy prototype we're discussing, something for safe sidewalk travel, you just can't rely on the big public data sets that are out there.
Absolutely not. I mean, if you're a professor or researcher in this field, you know, Cityscapes, A2D2, KTTI, they're foundational, sure, but they are fundamentally vehicle-centric.
Right. Wrong perspective, wrong level of detail.
Totally. They're looking down from higher up. They lack that granular detail you absolutely need for pedestrian safety. You've got to tell the difference between, say, a crack in the pavement and a temporary construction barrier, or know if that curb has a misplaced scooter blocking it.
Yeah, data that just doesn't exist, really. Not at that scale, and crucially from that viewpoint.
Correct. So the mission for this deep dive is to really analyze a specific methodological approach that tries to solve this data gap using automation.
Okay.
We're looking at a system for semantic segmentation of urban sidewalk scenes. It uses foundation models, FMs, to generate new data. And then there's a rigorous evaluation of specialized networks trained on that data.
So we'll walk through the implementation details, the results, keeping in mind that this needs to be practical, real-time, scalable for an actual user.
And that scalability is, well, it's the crux of it. Manually doing pixel-level segmentation for thousands, tens of thousands of sidewalk images. It's just prohibitively expensive, incredibly time-consuming, and, you know, humans are inconsistent.
Especially across different cities, different lighting.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's unpack this core methodological achievement. How did this workflow tackle the scalability problem without just throwing armies of manual labelers at it? Because for our audience, it's not just if it works, but how robust and reproducible is that automation pipeline?
Okay, so the breakthrough was this innovative two-stage pre-annotation approach. It cleverly fuses two different foundation models. Think of it like a two-step assembly line for creating these ground truth labels, but highly automated.
All right, walk us through that process. Which models and why that specific order?
So stage one is what they call semantic anchoring. For this, they use Grounding Dino. And here's a key detail. They specifically use the tiny version.
Oh, interesting. Why tiny?
Because the base version, apparently, showed some instability when detecting very small objects. And those small obstacles are exactly the kind of hazards you worry about in a pedestrian context, right?
Makes sense.
So Grounding Dino does open set object detection. You give it text prompts, it finds the objects, classifies them semantically, and gives you their bounding boxes, all while keeping the global image context in mind.
That contextual awareness sounds critical. I think I remember reading they explicitly tried and rejected doing classification after segmentation with something like CLIP.
They did, yeah. And it highlights why the Grounding Dino approach first makes sense. If you segment first and then try to classify an isolated mask fragment with CLIP, well, you lose context. Is that red patch part of a brick path or maybe a stop sign?
Right. You can't tell it a company.
Exactly. Grounding Dino avoids that by classifying within the full image context. So once Dino gives you the bounding box and the semantic label, you move to stage two, precision masking.
And that's where SAM comes in, segment anything model.
Precisely. The bounding boxes from Grounding Dino become the prompts fed directly into SAM. And for this step, needing high precision, they used SAM's large or huge models.
Why the bigger models?
Better consistency, essentially. They were getting really high intersection over union IOU scores, typically between 79% and 85%. And you need that level of precision, that boundary accuracy, for a safety critical application like this.
Okay, hold on though. Even getting up to 85% IOU, the paper stressed this review component, a manual quality check. They reported, what, a 27% rejection rate for the generated masks in their BGH data set? If nearly one in four masks needed fixing, how truly scalable is this? And what does it tell us about just relying purely on FMs for ground truth?
Yeah, that 27% figure is, I think, arguably one of the most important practical findings for anyone working in this area. It really highlights that tension between automation speed and domain-specific safety requirements.
So the FMs do the heavy lifting, but you still need a human expert.
Pretty much. The FMs handled, 73% of the really complex pixel-by-pixel labeling work automatically.
Yeah.
It's huge. But that manual review was absolutely essential for catching errors. Things like mislabeling calling a cone a traffic light, or more commonly, slightly imperfect segment boundaries.
Okay.
It confirms a critical point. FMs are amazing accelerators, a real force multiplier. But for these high-stakes specific domains, you absolutely need robust human-in-the-loop validation to guarantee the training data is reliable.
So it ensures their final data set, the BGH data set, 300 images, right? Ensures it's high quality, even if the quantity isn't massive initially.
Exactly. Impeccable quality over just raw quantity.
Which makes sense, because 300 images, even high-quality ones, is still pretty small for deep learning. Which leads us nicely into the next stage, data enrichment. How do they try to compensate for that small BGH dataset size and make the models generalize better to all sorts of different urban scenes?
Right. So they explored sophisticated data enrichment strategies. They basically tested three versions of the data, the original BGH, then an augmented version using standard geometric and color shifts, and finally, a synthetic data version.
Trying to build out from that high-quality core.
Precisely. The goal was generalization.
Let's focus on the synthetic generation, because reading the results, that's where things got you.
Yeah.
Well, interesting, almost counterintuitive. How did they create the synthetic data? What tools?
They used a combination of Stable Diffusion and ControlNet. The key was feeding the high-precision masks, the ones generated by the DynaSAM pipeline, formatted for 80-20K compatibility, into ControlNet.
So ControlNet maintains the structure.
Exactly. Its job was to preserve the structural integrity, the object shapes, the composition, making sure boundaries stayed consistent. While that was happening, Stable Diffusion was prompted with text to vary everything else. Lighting, weather, rain, strong shadows, even subtle perspective shifts, trying to create diverse, realistic-looking scenes.
Okay, and here's the crucial part for data scientists listening. The performance impact of adding this synthetic data wasn't straightforward. It really depended on the complexity of the segmentation task. What did the results actually show?
Yeah, it wasn't a simple more data is always better scenario, which is a really valuable insight. If you look at the simpler task, binary segmentation, basically just sidewalk versus not sidewalk.
Mm.
Simple data augmentation worked great.
The standard flips and color changes.
Right. Those significantly boosted the lighter models. Fastest CNN, for instance, jumped from about 69.5% IOU to 75.8%. A nice, clear win.
Okay, easy win there.
But, and this is the twist, adding the synthetic data often actually hurt performance for the more stable models, like UNet, on this simple task.
Really? Degraded performance?
Yeah. And when they tried combining both augmentation and synthetic data, it failed across the board. Plus, massively increased training time. UNet training took like 5 times longer per epoch, around 700 seconds.
Wow. So for the simple task, maybe the models got confused by this synthetic data. Or overfit to the artifact.
That seems to be the interpretation. Like, the models learned the patterns in the high-quality BGH data really well, but then struggled to generalize when faced with the subtly different artificial variations in the synthetic set.
Okay. But the story changed for the harder task.
Completely. When they moved to multi-class segmentation, which is much harder, differentiating between road, sidewalk, building, person, all those classes.
Suddenly the synthetic data was useful.
Yes, exactly. In that more complex scenario, the synthetic data proved really valuable. It helped the models generalize better, especially for the rarer classes that didn't appear as often in the original 300 images. UNet's MIOU saw a big jump over 10 percentage points, from 59.2% up to 69.6%.
So the takeaway for practitioners is be careful with synthetic data.
I'd say the optimal data strategy is highly context dependent. You really need to tune it based on your specific task complexity and how much data you have for rare classes. Synthetic data seems best used strategically, maybe to fill gaps for rare examples, or when the task itself is inherently very complex, not just as a blunt instrument to increase data set size for simpler problems.
That's a fantastic insight, and it sets up the next logical step perfectly. Benchmarking the actual segmentation networks trained on this carefully curated BGH data set. What architectures did they test, and what were the key trade-offs, especially thinking about that WayBuddy application?
So the main goal, the target they set, was hitting over 70% mean intersection over Union MIOU For an assistive application like this, 70% was deemed the sort of safety critical benchmark, the point where the segmentation boundaries are reliable enough that you could potentially trust them for navigation feedback.
And did they hit it?
Yes, multiple architectures did meet that objective, which is a success in itself.
Okay, so which models came out on top in terms of raw performance?
For the binary task, DeepLab V3 Plus and UNet were the stars, hitting 83.0% and 81.1% IOU, respectively. And here's a really significant finding supporting their data generation pipeline. The results on the fully auto-annotated BGH dataset were statistically almost identical to results on a larger, partially manually annotated dataset they also had called BBGH.
Over the numbers.
It was like 78.59% IOU versus 78.64% IOU. Almost no difference.
That's huge. It basically validates the whole DynaSAM auto-annotation approach as a way to get high-quality ground truth. Reproducibly.
Exactly. It shows the method work. But then you have the practical constraint, speed versus accuracy, especially for running on a mobile device, which isn't exactly a supercomputer.
Right. The deployment reality check.
Yeah. So DeepLab V3 plus SNEM, while very accurate, it got up to 74.3% IOU, even on the harder multi-class task, it comes with a computational cost. It's heavy.
And the alternative.
Contrast that with something like Fast SCNN. That one is incredibly fast. They measured it at something like 232.5 frames per second inference speed.
Wow, that's blazing fast. But what about accuracy?
There's the trade-off. Its accuracy, especially on the multi-class task, dropped significantly, down into the high 50s for MIOU. And that's just not reliable enough for safe path planning. You can't risk missegmenting the edge of the road.
So too fast, not safe enough. Where's the sweet spot then for the actual prototype?
Well, the research pointed towards either DeepLab V3 Plus or another model, BISnet V2, as the most practical choices, especially BISnet V2 when combined with data augmentation that pushed its binary MIOU up to 81.1%, matching UNet. These seem to offer the best balance, hitting that critical 70% accuracy threshold while being efficient enough for on-device deployment.
Okay, let's shift to that deployment then. The final really pragmatic step. Getting the WayBuddy prototype running. And importantly, they tested this not on some specialized mobile AI chip, but on a standard consumer phone, right? A Samsung A52s, using TorchScript for optimization. Was real-time segmentation actually feasible on that kind of hardware?
Technically, yes, it was feasible, but just barely, let's say. The critical constraint was keeping the total system latency from image capture to feedback under half a second. That's crucial for immediate user feedback.
Half a second total. Okay. What about just the model inference time?
Focusing just on the model inference, DeepLab V3 plus Sari, the more accurate but heavier one, ran at about 420 milliseconds per frame, which translates to roughly 2.4 FPS.
Oof, 420 milliseconds. That doesn't leave much room for the rest of the processing pipeline, sensor input, navigation logic.
Exactly. It's tight. The optimized BISnet V2 performed much better, clocking in around 230 milliseconds per frame. Or about 4.3 FPS.
Okay, that's more workable.
Yeah, and demonstrating that these optimized architectures running efficiently via TorchScript could maintain stability and provide feedback basically immediately. That really confirms the technical possibility of doing this kind of demanding ML on device. It's a solid proof of concept.
That's great news for feasibility. But the researchers were also commendably honest about the limitations they hit during testing. Areas that really need to be tackled in future academic work. What were the main research gaps they flagged from the WayBuddy trials?
They highlighted three major ones. The first, and honestly the most critical, is what they termed safety mechanism failure.
Sounds serious.
It is. The navigation logic can segment the path, tell the user where the sidewalk is, but it currently lacks robust, foolproof safety mechanisms to absolutely prevent the user from unintentionally stepping into a dangerous area, like leaving the sidewalk and walking into traffic.
Yeah, that's the nightmare scenario.
Absolutely. It's a huge ethical and functional gap. Current segmentation alone isn't enough. You need deeper algorithmic safeguards.
Okay, that's number one. What was the second gap? Related to complex scenes.
That was contextual pathfinding. The system segments okay, but it struggles in really complex situations. Think busy intersections, sudden changes in lighting from shadows or tunnels. Why? Because it lacks enough semantic context for truly stable, dynamic route planning.
So it knows sidewalk, but not necessarily the best or safest way to navigate that sidewalk through chaos.
You got it. It's the difference between just seeing the pieces and understanding the whole picture well enough to make smart navigation decisions. Moving from segmentation fidelity to actual navigational intelligence is still a big hurdle.
Makes sense. And the third point was about improving robustness.
Yes, using sensor fusion. They strongly recommended future work explore adding other sensors. Relying only on a single camera for vision has inherent limits, especially with depth perception and understanding 3D geometry accurately.
Like LiDAR or depth cameras.
Exactly. Fusing visual data with depth information from LiDAR or depth cameras would significantly boost obstacle recognition and geometric understanding. It gives you a much more complete picture of the environment than vision alone can provide. So, to wrap up the core conclusion for our audience, you AI professionals out there, this research really did successfully demonstrate a reliable, scalable, and importantly, reproducible way to generate high-quality domain-specific segmentation data. That fusion of grounding Dino and SAM works.
Mm-hmm.
And the data it produced was good enough to train specialized networks like BidesNet V2 or DeepLab B3 Plus to exceed that critical 70% IOU safety threshold on challenging real-world sidewalk data. Plus, they showed it's feasible to run this on standard mobile hardware within that crucial half-second latency window.
Which is a significant achievement. But considering that profound ethical responsibility we talked about with assistive AI, here's the final thought we want to leave you with, something to maybe chew on for your own research agendas.
Hi.
Given that catastrophic failure mode, they identified the lack of robust safety to prevent users from entering traffic. What's the most scientifically rigorous way, most mathematically sound method we need to develop to actually quantify and guarantee the necessary safety margin for these models operating in such dynamic, high-stakes environments?
Yeah, quantifying trust and guaranteeing safety in systems that are inherently probabilistic. That remains the grand challenge before widespread, confident deployment. It's where the next breakthroughs are needed.
A huge thank you to the research team for sharing their work. And thanks to you for joining us. We'll catch you next time on The Deep Dive.